Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hello there, it's me, Josh. And for this week's SYSK Selects, I've chosen our episode, Was There a Real Atlantis? And it turns out there very well may have been. At the very least, there's a very exciting lost city that archaeologists found that, well, it may have been the model for the Atlantis legend. I don't want to ruin anything. I don't want to spoil anything. So just kick back and enjoy this adventure episode.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, back in the saddle again with Charles W. Chuck Bryant. We share a horse.
We do. I have a horse sidecar, actually. It's a small mule.
Yeah.
That's attached to your horse.
Yeah.
And I have to lean into the corners.
It's more of a hay cart than a sidecar.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Back in the saddle, meaning we are back from Texas and back in the recording booth for the first time in, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, it feels nice, dude.
This smelly little dimly lit room.
Yeah, it's strangely. Yeah. At least it's not like blood colored. You know?
Yeah.
Man.
That'd be weird.
So, Chuck.
Yes.
I guess we should get started, huh?
You don't have an intro?
Well, I was going to use the intro as the intro.
Go ahead then.
Have you ever heard of a place called Atlantis?
I have.
Are you read like the Bermuda Triangle?
The Vacation Getaway?
No, where like Britney Spears stayed for free for like a month when they opened to try to generate buzz.
Wow. I'm sure they were packing them in after that.
I think they have been. I don't know. I can't discuss the financial estate of Atlantis, the resort in the Bahamas. But what I can discuss is Atlantis, the possibly fictitious place.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go on record as fictitious.
Are you?
Well, after reading this, and by the way, this was awesome.
Thanks,
I had
man.
No idea about the secret surprise that's coming.
Which one?
Well, the other place, the real place.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Which I meant to ask you before how we pronounce that, but we'll just get to that and I'll let you say it first.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm going to say it's fictitious and based on that.
Okay. I think I kind of go with that too.
Yeah.
Mainly because one of the things about Plato is he was the only person to ever mention Atlantis. Plenty of people have mentioned it after him.
Yeah.
But it was based on what he said.
Right.
Which kind of makes you think like, oh, okay, is this this is an allegory probably. It's about wickedness.
Yeah, what was his book in? Timaeus?
Yeah.
That was the book.
Right.
Where he first mentioned it.
Yeah. And it was written in 360 BC. And Timaeus is one of his dialogues, I believe. And Plato has a thing where he likes to take real places, real people, real events, mm-hmm. and then just kind of use some literary license.
Sure.
He's a philosopher, okay?
Yeah, he was not a documentarian of real things.
Right. But along the way, somewhere, that idea got lost, right?
Right.
So, for example, Sodom and Gomorrah. I would wager that a lot of people think that Sodom and Gomorrah...
I love those guys.
...something really happened, and that it was
it was taken eventually. It was used as allegory that these people were punished by God.
Right.
But really, you know, something really bad happened to them, and somebody decided, hey, this is a great, great chance to use this as a life lesson for everyone.
Yeah.
So there's a really strong possibility that Plato did the same thing, because as he describes Atlantis, they had gotten kind of hubristic, I guess.
It does mimic other things in the Bible, that's for sure.
It does. And the great god Poseidon, who is the god of the sea and of earthquakes, decided that he was kind of tired of the people of Atlantis,
yeah,
which was the seat of a cult that worshipped him, right?
Yeah.
So he, using the techniques at hand, created an earthquake that generated a tsunami that sunk Atlantis beneath the waves, lost forever.
Yeah, I think the quote from the book was it sank into the sea in a single day and night of misfortune.
Yeah.
That's putting it lightly.
So,
and he placed it too, didn't he? Actually,
yeah.
It's, where? Off Spain?
The Pillars of Hercules, which is now called the Strait of Gibraltar.
And there's people looking in Spain now, right?
Yeah,
they
like
still think
legitimate,
right?
Bona fide archaeologists.
They're fun.
Yeah. So Plato, I guess part of the problem is he's saying, like, yes, this was at the Strait of Gibraltar.
Right.
In his parlance at the time, he's saying, is at the Strait of Gibraltar. The problem is Atlantis was this magnificent ringed city.
Yeah.
And it had, like, fantastic technology and architecture.
Yeah.
And it was just an amazingly advanced place. But he also says that this happened 9,000 years ago, right?
Right, so
9,000 years before him.
So they're aliens.
Well, that is thanks to a guy named Ignatius Donnelly.
Yeah.
So this guy, so Plato writes about Atlantis, goes about his business, right? Dies.
Well, and apparently nobody back then took it seriously. That's like modern man were the first people to say, ooh, maybe there was an Atlantis.
Yeah.
Back in the day, everyone was like, nah, it's just Plato going off again.
Right. It was this one guy, Ignatius Donnelly.
Oh, he's the one.
You can lay it all at his feet.
Jerk.
Because in 1882, he published a book called Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. And in it, he's saying, okay, the Azores, man, I wish I'd looked that one up.
I think that's right.
The islands in the middle of the Atlantic, that's actually the highest peaks of the highest mountaintops of Atlantis.
Yeah.
And wait, there's more. The incredibly advanced civilizations in Egypt,
mm-hmm,
and high up in the Andes of Peru,
yeah,
pre-Inca, those were colonies set forth by Atlantis that survived because they weren't there for the sinking of Atlantis.
Yeah.
So basically, we have civilization to thank. We have Atlantis to thank for civilization. The problem is all of this is totally unfounded, but it just kicked off the occultization of Atlantis.
Yeah, it's been placed everywhere from South China Sea, the Caribbean, the Pacific, the Indian Ocean, the Canary Islands, Antarctica, supposedly.
Switzerland?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't chase that one down, but I saw somewhere that somebody said Switzerland.
Let's go ahead and say everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
Atlantis is everywhere.
There's Edgar Cayce, who is known as the Sleeping Prophet of Virginia Beach, who's a psychic. He said that Atlantis stretched from the Gulf of Mexico to Spain.
Yeah.
And that the Bermuda Triangle... There were a lot of, you know, if there is mystery in the Bermuda Triangle, it's due to Atlantis's energy crystals.
Well, I will say, though, he said it would rise off Bimini. And then when they discovered the Bimini Road, everyone was like, see there?
Yeah. And then it's too bad Cherry's not here because she's like, I dove the Bimini Road.
Yeah, guest producer Maddie is in the house.
Hey, Matt.
We didn't mention that.
So once Donnelly comes along and kind of takes up the mantle of searching for Atlantis and making it as far out as possible, it just becomes more and more the domain of, like, fringe dwellers, right?
Sure.
But that is not to say that there aren't legitimate archaeologists searching for something like Atlantis. That doesn't mean that there isn't something that inspired Plato.
Right.
And we probably know what that is, actually.
That's where my money is.
Yeah.
And now you're going to make me say it, even though I asked you to say it. Hiliki?
Haliki.
Hiliki.
Haliki.
Haliki.
Yeah.
Okay.
Haliki.
Spelled he-like.
Yeah.
I saw some weird pronunciation things that I didn't understand when I looked it up.
Yeah.
So I just figured I'd hear it from you.
That was Greek to you.
It was, indeed.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So yeah, the cat's out of the bag, as far as I'm concerned. It is Hiliki.
Well done.
Case closed.
End of podcast.
It was a super interesting story, though. This was well documented by lots of people, not like a single source like Plato.
Single made-up source.
Exactly. And it was a lost Greek city. It suffered a fate much like Atlantis supposedly did.
Yeah. So Hiliki was this very powerful city in ancient Greece on the Gulf Corinth.
Very nice in that area.
Yeah, I imagine. Have you been?
No.
I want to go.
I do too.
It was powerful enough to have its own colonies. So imagine if Atlanta had colonies in like Germany. This
right.
is very much the case for Hiliki. And it was the seat of power for a 12-city league called the Achaean League, which is kind of like the Confederacy in the South.
Yeah. Would that be like having a bar in a different city that's like your home bar? Like, you know, they have like, it's usually football based. There's like a New York Jets bar in Atlanta.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a Pittsburgh Steelers bar in Atlanta.
Maybe.
Is that the same thing?
I thought it was more like the capital of like a number of states.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think it's the same thing, but I like that analogy.
I'm just being coy.
So the Achaean League, now I've just realized that I've missed something.
No, that's right.
Joke.
Yeah.
So the Hiliki is the city or the center of the Achaean League. It controlled like the shipping around there. By the time Plato came about, it was hundreds of years old already.
Yeah, very active port.
They had their own coinage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it looked very cool too. I looked up the coins.
Yeah.
Like dolphins and Poseidon and pitchforks. What do they call the
tridents?
Tridents.
Yeah. And it had Poseidon on the coin because this was like the seat of a cult of Poseidon.
Yeah.
Just like Atlantis.
Exactly.
And it had a very prominent, well-known statue of Poseidon, just like Atlantis, right?
That's right.
So the similarities are starting to mount up.
They are. And they really mount in a big way in December of 373 BC. When the townspeople started noticing, wait a minute, all these small animals are scurrying for the hills.
Yeah.
And that's never a good sign because we did talk about in another podcast how animals can sense underground tremors.
It had to have been in how earthquakes work.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And sure enough, earthquake came in the middle of the night on the fifth day. And that was followed by an enormous wave. And just like that, overnight, just like Atlantis, it was submerged.
Yeah.
To the bottom of the sea. Well, not the bottom, but.
No. And not necessarily the sea either, as we'll see in a second.
Yes, this is getting more mysterious.
So so this really happened. This is pretty, it was a pretty well-known event. One of the, I guess we should say there were no survivors. Like people from the surrounding cities got together like a search party.
Yeah.
A rescue party that set out at dawn just a few hours after this happened.
In a boat, I guess.
There was... Well, I think they walked as far as they could and were like, oh,
yeah.
Well, there's now like a sea where there used to be this city.
Yeah.
It's gone. There was no one there. Apparently, the only thing visible were the tops of the trees in Poseidon's sacred grove.
That's creepy.
I would guess olive trees.
Yeah. And there were 10 ships, and this will come up later too, from Sparta that were docked there in the port, and they were gone as well.
Just gone.
And that will play an important part here coming up soon.
Yeah. So imagine, like, there's a city. It's a very powerful, rich city. And you live out in the boondocks, and you just know something happened. There's an earthquake, so you go to check on the city, and then the city's gone, and it's just silence. And there's 10 ships that aren't there anymore. Everything is just gone.
Creepy.
What was even creepier, though, is you could look down into the city underwater and see it all there still.
Yeah, including the statue of Poseidon, which apparently still stood erect and in place.
Right, and local fishermen and ferrymen reported having their nets get caught in Poseidon's statue all the time, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
But so you could see Helike for hundreds of years, which is one of the reasons why it's so well documented.
Yeah.
Because there were, it was kind of like, have you heard of Thanatourism? Dark tourism or death tourism?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of like an early version of a dark tourism site. Like,
come to this mass cemetery.
Yeah, exactly. And you could go check it out, and travelers and writers and scholars did, and they documented what they saw. Pretty specifically, too.
Yeah.
Like in Stadia, they said, well, this is where the city is now. This is where it was in relation to, you know, this river or that river.
Right.
So, like, the sources are pretty abundant, and they're pretty specific.
Speaking of abundant.
Yeah.
And rivers.
Yeah.
And sources.
Okay.
Look at you. That area was unique in that it had these three rivers that met there. bringing fresh water in. So you got some good fresh water.
Right.
You got some good seawater with tons of good seafood. You got very rich land for crops. We got irrigation because we got the fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
The weather's gorgeous. So it's right here on the lovely seaside, and that's what made it an ideal spot for people to say, hey, maybe we should settle down here.
Yeah. Let's hang out here for a while and get fat on shrimp.
Unfortunately, it's also a bad spot because there are two fault lines that run parallel through the area, and they have been known to cause some major disruption over the years.
Like the earthquake that destroyed Helike.
Exactly.
And generated the tsunami. So it's kind of like this whole place is like made to produce a lost city, right?
Yeah.
Because there's other places around the world where there's violent tectonic activity, and it's coastal, so that means that it's in danger of a tsunami.
California, not California, with a tsunami, I don't think.
Japan.
But, yeah.
The Malaysian tsunami in 2004. There's a lot of places, but to produce that will ruin a coastal city, right?
Yes.
But for it to become lost, it has to be covered up somehow. And Helike is in a really unique situation for this because of those three rivers that form the Helike Delta,
yeah,
where Helike was situated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the earthquake, you've got the tsunami, so you have a ruined city.
Yeah.
It's now submerged. And then these three rivers bring a lot of silt to the area. And so eventually Helike was covered up over the centuries.
Yeah, you put it in the article about how if you bought a house, or not bought a house, let's say built a house along the shore in 1890, it would be 1,000 feet inland.
Yeah.
Which I imagine is quite a rub for people,
right,
that build that lovely house right on the water.
Yeah. Because within a century or so, it's going to be a couple of streets back.
And there's like 10 jerks in front of you,
right,
that have built houses.
Exactly. And it's kind of like, what's that game where you like leapfrog?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Monopoly, where you build bigger houses than the other guy.
Oh, yeah. That would have worked, too.
Yeah, sure.
So you've got the tsunamis. You've got the river. You've got the...
silt.
The silt. You also have the delta itself, because of this violent activity, is moving up, they're finding.
Yeah.
Over time, it's rising. So you have a rising delta, which is low. It's like right at sea level.
Yeah.
But it's getting bigger, and silt is piling it up and making dry ground even further jut out into the coast.
Well, what it made was a nice little surprise for archaeologists.
Right.
And I imagine archaeologists just went berserk with this place.
Yeah, they had no idea. They just thought Haliki itself was there. They knew it was there.
Yeah.
And that, they suspected it would be kind of like a Pompeii.
Sure.
But even more... They considered it even more vital to archaeology or the archaeological record than Pompeii even.
Well, what they found, though, as you know, Josh, but we're going to spring it on you now, is six other distinct occupied horizons besides six other ones or seven total?
Six total.
Six total, mm-hmm. Five others besides Haliki.
Yeah.
Underneath, one on top of the other, that had been settled and civilized and wiped out and covered up.
And like just kind of captured in time.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Which one, what were they?
So there was one from the Byzantine period, which was pretty long. I think it ran from like 200 AD to the 15th century.
Yeah.
And then beneath that, there is a Roman ruin.
Yeah.
Which is from the 2nd to the 4th AD. And that one even features a Roman road.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the road that travelers and writers used to come look at Haliki,
right.
The ruins. And that one also, Chuck, this just blows my mind. It's so captured in time that there's a human skeleton atop a cattle skull that like it was knocked on top of this beast and killed like by rock and rubble.
Wow.
And just kept there. So their skeletons are intertwined now.
Crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
So the Roman city's on top of Haliki.
Mm-hmm.
Then beneath Haliki, they found even more stuff. They found a settlement from the Bronze Age,
yeah,
2600 to 2300 BC.
Right.
And before that, they kept digging and found prehistoric Neolithic period civilization, possibly as old as 12,000 years.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something beneath that even.
I don't know.
This makes me think they should start digging in Los Angeles or other like seaside retreats.
Yeah.
To see what you could find.
Well, there's a whole, there's this whole idea, especially among Atlantis hunters, that it's extremely intuitive because of rising sea levels that anything that was established around the last ice age or even at about the end of it,
yeah,
the sea levels have risen like more than 100 feet since then.
Yeah.
So any coastal cities now underwater.
Right.
That's like a big thing that they hunt for now, or that archaeologists are kind of starting to try to get into, is looking for human habitation underwater.
Wow.
Like there's this whole area off of Wales, I think, Northern Wales,
mm-hmm.
Northern Ireland maybe, or Scotland. Anyway, it's called Doggerland, and it's like just this submerged area that used to be above ground, and they're finding like Neolithic settlements there.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Well, and you know, the Earth has changed so much over the course of its existence that what's here didn't used to be here, and what was there was something else. And
yeah,
so yeah, I think there's no telling what's down there.
But that idea and the fact that you can find Neolithic settlements underwater supports, ironically, the notion that there could be something like Atlantis that's lost somewhere.
Like Haliki.
Right.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So these guys, they found this area, and once they found Heliki, it all started to, it was like jackpot. But finding Heliki itself proved a little more difficult than they thought, especially considering all the documentation they had.
Yeah, they supposedly knew where it was, quote unquote.
Right.
Like, it's not like they were searching for a needle in a haystack.
Right.
They were searching for like a pool cue in a haystack.
Okay.
You know?
Sure.
So in the late 80s, a couple of Cornell professors started looking for it for realsies. And they had a little bit of misinterpretation for the word, for the translation for body of water. And lucky enough, they had a Greek woman with them.
Well, she's one of the Cornell professors.
Oh, she was?
Yeah.
Oh, well then lucky that she was Greek.
Well, yeah.
Because she translated, she was like, wait a minute. She's like, it may not be in the Gulf after all. It may be inland.
Yeah.
And they were like, what?
Yeah, everybody had been thinking that this was the Gulf had swallowed them up, swallowed up the city.
Which would make sense.
Right. It turns out it was an inland lagoon that did. So I think it was very much akin to the, you know, the Noah's Ark episode we just did?
Yeah.
What is it? The Dead Sea, I think, where they think that the Dead Sea used to be fresh water.
Right.
Now it's salt water.
Right.
Because that's evidence of the flood happening.
Right.
And probably what they think is the Mediterranean overwhelmed the strait. I can't remember what strait it was.
You're searching the reaches.
Yeah. Anyway, I think it was much the same way. Like the city used to be around a lagoon, and then the lagoon got a lot bigger, thus swallowing the city.
Right. So they looked under land, and all of a sudden they had to ditch their scuba gear for shovels.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the first Roman city, the first ruins. We're like, wait a minute, 12 feet, just 12 feet yeah. below the land.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like that far at all.
No, it's not. Because like, the Roman ruins were like 4 or 5 feet.
Yeah, I would think that someone would have accidentally found it before that even, you know?
Well, that kicked it off. There was a German archaeologist who was traveling in the area and found a Heliki coin with Poseidon on it. Oh. And was like, holy cow, this is significant.
Right.
So I think that's kind of how it started.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So they found have found a lot of stuff since then. Buildings, industrial buildings, kilns, looms, intersecting streets.
Yeah, with buildings along these streets.
Yeah, like a real city.
Yeah.
What else? The coins, of course. Jugs.
Jugs with their original contents. And those are from the Bronze Age.
Right.
They found a storehouse of like jugs of different sizes and types from the Bronze Age. So we're talking like 5,000 years old.
Crazy.
They don't have any idea about these civilizations, but this was contemporary to like ancient Troy.
Right.
Which itself was considered a legendary city until Heinrich Schliemann found it.
Right.
Just finding this stuff is amazingly awesome.
Well, and there's more.
Yeah, there is.
Supposedly.
Yes. So they think that they found the outskirts of Heliki and that there's a lot more left and that it's intact.
Oh, they're not actually at Heliki yet?
No, they're in Hiliki, but they're not in the city center, they don't
think. Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
So they're just out in the outskirts.
That's what they think.
Wow.
Yeah. And when they were looking for Hiliki out in the Gulf, they found something cool too, didn't they?
I don't think I know this.
You do know it. They found a seawall, ancient seawall of the city.
Oh, really?
And they also found what they think are the 10 Spartan ships.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I thought you were going to say the statue of Poseidon. That would be like...
Well, they'll find it eventually.
The mother lode, if they found that thing still standing upright under the earth.
So they keep following. They started by following the Roman road.
Right.
So they're unearthing, like, imagine this, dude. They're unearthing like three lost cities at once.
That's crazy.
Isn't that insane? Do you know what like an archaeological treasure trove that is?
Yeah.
So they're unearthing them, and as long as they don't intersect, right, as long as like the Roman town isn't built directly over the statue of Poseidon,
right,
to where getting to Poseidon would undermine the Roman town.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they should be able to get it all, and they're going to be doing. They'll excavate this for decades.
So this has been ongoing since the late 80s.
Yeah, well, no, so they really started uncovering stuff in like 2000.
Wow!
But they started in 1988.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that's Hiliki. So. Of course, Chuck, this doesn't mean that anybody has stopped searching for Atlantis.
Like no.
The archaeologist in Spain.
Yeah, he's looking inland now, which comes from this theory, so maybe he's onto something.
It's possible.
He's going to start digging up in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And people are going to say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Drink some wine.
So you were saying that you think that Plato was inspired by Hiliki.
Sure.
I think there's substantial evidence in what we've said, but also keep in mind, Hiliki happened in 373. Plato wrote his book in 360, 13 years later, and he lived in the area. This is a pretty well-known catastrophe, so yeah. I think you're probably right.
But we would not have had the awesome TV show Man from Atlantis had it not been for Plato.
No, I guess that's true.
Did you watch that?
No.
That was a little before your time.
And there's an awesome H.P. Lovecraft short story about a German U-boat that ends up in Atlantis. It's awesome.
I tried to find YouTube stuff of Man from Atlantis. And there's plenty out there. You know, he had the webbed hands when I was a kid. I thought,
oh, really?
Yeah, he had webbed hands and feet.
It's not Prince Nemo, is it? The Submariner?
Prince Nemo? Nemo?
No, Prince Nemo.
Yeah. No.
He's a Marvel comic guy.
No. It was a schlocky. It ran for like 1 year.
Was he like a detective? 70s. Was it?
Yeah,
his
he was.
Mom,
he had
was
super.
His mom a car?
He had superhuman strength and could breathe underwater. Had gills and he had webbed feet and hands. And I think like some government agency snapped him up to do like investigative undersea work for them.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Welcome back, Cotter.
It was a dude from Dallas, Patrick, what's his face?
Patrick Ewing? Patrick Duffy.
You're thinking J.R. Ewing?
Yeah.
Patrick Ewing is a basketball player.
Right.
Patrick Duffy, yeah.
Yeah.
That's him.
Huh.
It was good stuff.
I have never heard of that show.
Yeah. It was only around for 1 year, I think. But boy, I was into it when I was like seven. Good stuff.
You had webbed hands.
Yeah. It got me into Play-Doh.
You hadn't been eating it for years now?
Funny guy.
All right, so that's it. You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
Thank you for doing this one with me.
It was awesome. Thank you for opening my eyes to coolness.
Anytime. If you want to know more about Hiliki, you should search for Was There a Real Atlantis by typing that into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I said that, which means it's time for listener mail.
That's right. Josh, remember when we did a little TV pilot recently? We tried to get these bookends onto the show.
Mm-hmm.
They arrived a little late. We weren't able to, but I want to tell everyone about this project.
Okay.
Because that sounds very cryptic.
All right.
This is from Mike. Hey, guys. I've been a big fan for a couple of years, and I especially like that some of your causes you have taken on and considered and done podcasts about them. Kiva and the Cooperative for Education in particular. So our Guatemala podcast gave him an idea for a Facebook fundraising idea to raise awareness for Co-op, our buddies,
right.
Cooperative for Education.
Co-ed.
Out of Cincinnati.
Right.
Who do the awesome textbook programs and computer center labs in Guatemala. And he proposed it to them, and they said, heck yeah, let's do this. So his idea was to create, quote-unquote, celebrity bookends, with just this basic idea. Take an ordinary set of bookends, although they are pretty fancy looking,
right.
I gotta admit, and make them super famous pop culture icons through social media, and then sell them for $1 million and give it all to co-ed. So that's the plan.
That's a good plan.
I don't know if we added anything to that.
We added at least 70 cents.
Okay, good. He says, I know it sounds crazy, but crazy is usually what it takes to get people to notice things. The rational thinking behind this is that to get famous, all you need to have are a ton of people believing that you're famous. You know?
Yeah. I mean, what else is celebrity?
Yeah, exactly. So they're trying to drum up celebrity for these bookends to raise awareness.
Right.
They have sent them around the world to meet people and to be on TV shows and in movies. They're documenting this on Facebook, the travels of these bookends, and Twitter and blogs for people to follow. And our big, audacious goal is to get as many Facebook fans as Kim Kardashian. She has 9 million fans. Can you believe that?
Sadly, yes.
Wow. So what we're hoping for your listeners is that they will like the idea enough to want to help. All you have to do, it can be as simple as going to the Facebook page, follow you on Twitter, the celebrity bookends, that is. Tweet about us, blog about us, tell your friends to like us, and hook us up with any celebrity friends that you might have. They have been in the hands of Danny DeVito.
Yes.
Matt Berninger of The National.
Right.
I didn't know how to pronounce that, but I do love The National. And I believe I saw Jeff Bridges holding these things.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then
before us?
Yeah.
Sweet.
So we actually got a little DeVito Bridges stank on our hands.
Yeah.
Unless they clean these things. And they sent it to us originally to get it in our cubicles on the TV pilot, but they arrived a little late and we weren't able to, so we just did some pictures. And maybe on down the road, if we do any more TV stuff, we can get them on television and do our part to help raise awareness.
Nice, man.
So, facebook.com/celebritybookends or Twitter @celebritybookends or send an email to celebritybookends@gmail. And that raises awareness to eventually sell these things to Danny DeVito to raise money for co-ed.
For $1 million.
Well, I certainly don't have $1 million.
Well, we also have our own Twitter handle, and you can get in touch with us, too, while you're talking to Celebrity Bookends. You can tweet to us, whatever you want. There's no rules, except that it has to be 140 characters or less, just that rule. That's SYSK Podcast. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow, and you can send us an email as well at stuffpodcast.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.